Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And of course, you said about being interviewed by people who haven't read your book, which is something I never do. I very rarely interview people having not read the book, but in this case I have. So I'm going to start with a question about your experience with the festival. You said you first came to the festival at 16.
16, once. Mm-hmm. I was before when I was 10, because Venice, the most organized also a section called Festival dei Ragazzi. Mm. It was a particular section for young people. So my first experience was to see animated Czechoslovakian film Old Czech Legend by Jiří Weiss, 52. And after, the first emotion here was to see a title of Erich von Stroheim, Blind House, Husbands. And it was a very strong emotion for a young people, 16. And I decided to try to continue when I was 18 and to follow all the exhibit retrospective all the section. It was possible 50, 60 years ago because the program was of 4 or 5 title a day.
So you could watch the whole program.
All the program for 10 years was possible. Right. Starting from the 18 was impossible because they changed the program, increased and was 100 titles, 150 titles. So you have to decide what was better or more interesting. And I started to teach to the university, and so I was more interested to the retrospective, to the history of the cinema. And here, for many, many years, I had the possibility to discover Soviet cinema, Japanese cinema, Swedish cinema, American cinema, French cinema. From the beginning, and was a wonderful experience for me, and helped to continue to know the history of film. I tried to study and to know the general history of cinema. And here, I was obliged to come here. I lived in Lido till 24, 25 years. And
you grew up here, yes?
Yes, I grew up here. And when I finished my study at the university, I started to teach in Padua. And very soon, I started to teach cinema, very, very soon. And so this festival was very important in my life, and maybe I decided my career, what I want really to do in my life, thanks to the Lido.
Excellent. And so the festival's kind of like a university in itself. It sort of teaches you even as you're going ahead.
It's true. You had the possibility to see the contemporary cinema and to have a very large point of view on cinema all over the world, and in the same time to have this retrospective that introduce to a very particular moment of the history of the American cinema, of a big, very important director, or unknown cinema of Japan, or at a certain moment we had the possibility to see the Chinese cinema at the beginning of the 80s. And this was very, very important. And at a certain moment, I started to conduce my students here, because the Mostra opened to the students from the 80s, from the beginning of the 80s. And so the audience, the public changed in a very evident way.
It became more a broader audience.
See, broader and very young, and with the eyes open to the passion of cinema. And so from the very little audience of the beginning of the 60s, with the audience very distinguished. At a certain moment, with a director like Lizzani at the beginning of the 80s, you see an enormous audience that came to participate to the film of Spielberg, Indiana Jones, Alien, and to the film of enormous success. And we had the possibility to follow all the changes of the history of cinema, on the audience, on the narration, and on the instruments, the platforms. So
So in writing the book, being so close to the festival as a sort of lived experience yourself, when you were writing the book, did you discover some stuff that was, for you, a really big surprise? What was your sort of biggest surprise in your research?
Big surprise for me that I studied Kubrick was to discover that Kubrick was in 52 invited to exhibit, but not in competition. Mm. And no sign in the volume in the edition of the Biennale give this kind of information. I found in a recent biography, American biography on Kubrick, that it was present. So I made a research in the archive. I was not sure to find, and we found a receipt of the destinated to Kubrick in New York of this title, and after we discovered five letters. Mm. Of the director Antonio Petrucci, on the distributor, American distributor, and of Stanley Kubrick, was 23 years, and who wanted to know the reason for which he was not included in the competition.
Right, he wasn't happy.
He wasn't happy, and he asked what it means, length and character, the two reasons for which. Length, the film was an hour, 5 minutes of length. It was not normal. And I think, I have no real answer. I think that the commission of selection had the difficulty to understand if it was a documentary or a fiction film to decide. What, so they decided that it was better to... final destination was a festival of cinema scientifico didattico. Mm.
So this was Killer's Kiss, then, the film?
No, it was Shape of Fear.
Oh, right, Fear and Desire, I think.
Fear and Desire, right. The final title.
Right. Yeah. That's fascinating. What a fascinating discovery.
It was a wonderful discovery.
Like a research in your heart. It's like, oh.
I never imagined, I never heard of this. And this recent book that explored the archive of Kubrick found this, but not here. Mm. Apparently here, but now is a good sign of the perfect function of the archive to found
to be able to get it.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. And you've worked the last few years getting this whole history, and it's a huge comprehensive history. What insights have you got for the sort of the present version of the festival in comparison to it in the long story?
Now the interesting things on the present are that Venice is a sort of advanced point of vision. And they try to see, for instance, the virtual reality first, or to imagine to become a producer with the Biennale College and talent scout. It was not normal in the festival of all over the world. And this is possible because la Biennale had the possibility to imagine a thing like this, or the other point very interesting for me is the courage to include the platform in the program. Cannes is not again sure to open to Netflix or something. Here, not only they are present in the competition, but they obtain the prize.
Leone, won, yeah.
Roma of Cuaron was a great film, but produced by Netflix. And this seems to me the possibility to leave this moment of transformation, of the crisis, of the vision in the theaters, but a place like Lido and the Palazzo del Cinema continue to maintain the sense of the sacrality of the place.
So in comparison, it's, you were saying earlier on in the press conference that the Venice used to be the leader and then Cannes overtook in the 60s and 70s. Do you think that Venice is now the leader, or do you think it's Cannes, or do you think it's neck and neck?
I don't know exactly, but Venice seems in good situation now. In the ranking, international ranking, is not in fifth or sixth position. Very good situation as again leader. And what I appreciated in the selection is, I'm sure that try to see all the production in the world for this final selection. And the opening on the view is very important for me. And it is... the selection is linked to the single people.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
They are very conscient, informed on the, and they have an enlarged view.
So one final question. On this podcast, we always ask for a recommended film book that you could we can recommend to our listeners. So what film book would you like to recommend? Any at all in... on cinema that you would give someone and say, you've got this, you've got to read this.
There are so many book again, André Bazin, for instance, Robert Sklar, or the book on there are many books on Renoir, on Hitchcock, not one single book, but if you like cinema, you have To start from the book of Kevin Brownlow, Bordwell and Thompson in English version, and start to have an enlarged vision, and after the author too much linked to the university. Must have also the pleasure of the book and to be certain that all the information are controlled.
Correct.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Professore.
Grazie.
Thank you very much.
Grazie.
That was... Questo era fantastico.
Recording that bit as well.
No, I've just started. that isn't a bad
habit to get into. Start recording stuff, then you can sort of smooth into it.
So Jack King, we're here at the Venice Film Festival. We're on a terrace, the Campari terrace, in front of the Casino, as it's pronounced in Italian, because Casino means shit show in Italian. Yeah. So it's very important, the intonation, Casino, rather than Casino.
Well, it's welcome, actually, that Venice has not been a shit show this year, apart from like the first couple of days of booking that everybody was up in arms about. Other than that, it's been wonderful, as always. You know.
What are your picks of the festival so far?
I knew this was going to be a question, which is why I should have better prepared. I've warmed so much on Tar. I think Tar kind of got short sticked a little bit because it was the second film that I saw, and it was I don't think it played on the opening day. It did play on the opening evening. So, and it's the thing, like it's so great, and in retrospect I would put it up in my top two, my top three at least. But when I first saw it, I was like, I kind of needed to see more to kind of like get a more relative sense of what else is on offer. And it was also just something that retrospectively kind of warms on you and sticks with you so much. I have the same relationship with The Whale. I think The Whale, as divisive as it has proven, to say the least, is something that really, really sticks with you. And the ideas really broil and linger. So those are the two that have really stuck. I really loved Bones and All. I think Bones and All is the number one, because I am gotten, you know, pilled for my sins. And I was a big Timothée Chalamet agnostic after Call Me By Your Name. I think I've seen every film he's done post Call Me By Your Name, at least, which is like, it's like eight movies, you know, based on his little sliver roles and stuff like Little Women and Beautiful Boy, and Beautiful Boy was his lead after Call Me By Your Name. But he went quite downhill with Beautiful Boy. The script didn't service him at all, nor Steve Farrell, but like wasn't as nearly as good as the promise he showed in Call Me By Your Name. And then films like, you know, like the part that he had in Lady Bird, the part that he had in Little Women, kind of playing the same, I hesitate to call it an archetype, the same trope. You know, he's playing a fuckboy, but with variations on the kind of fuckboy theme. And then he did Dune with, you know, films in the interim, but then he did Dune as a big thing. I thought that was good, but Bones and All is like, will be seen as like the big Timothée Chalamet performance since Call Me By Your Name, and it's no surprise that it's come in collaboration with the same director. There's just something that, there's like a level of vulnerability that I think Guadagnino gets out of Chalamet that not to be presumptive, but on evidence, I haven't seen it in any of the other films that he's been in. So there's just something there that's just really wonderful. And Bones and All is just a wonderful picture in general.
Was that your favourite film to write about?
Yes, 100%, 100%, because there's so much to talk about. I was really surprised, actually, in other people's reviews, because I read the whole cornucopia of criticism that came out. I also read the novel before before coming to the festival, and I was really interested in how Guadagnino adapted the script. His co-writer, whose name escapes me, because in the original book, it's set in the 90s, and it's very much like a Clinton-era novel. It was young adult and stuff, so it didn't really get into the granular politics of the era. But you know, there are scenes where you see like Clinton giving the famous "I did not have sexual relations with that woman" speech and all this kind of stuff. Whereas in this version, it's the 80s and is very much updated for Reaganism and all that kind of stuff. And I think it fits the idea of cannibals who are addicted to consumption and are relentless in their pursuit of getting as much as they possibly can because it's an impulse, so much more, because that's like, as I kind of tried to unpick and unpack in my review, that feels like that's the almost like biological tick of capitalism. It's always that pursuit of wanting more, needing to consume more, needing to have more. That is not a novel observation to make about capitalism at all. I think George Romero made it in the 70s, as did everybody else. But, you know, I thought that was like such a wonderful kind of political zhuzhing of that script. And it's just so fucking romantic. Like, so gorgeous, and everybody puts in such a wonderful performance. I loved unpicking. I think it's the longest I've gone. It was that and the whale, because I felt like I was defending it so much, knowing that I walked out and I'd been bawling into that for 15 minutes, and I walked up to Kyle from the New York, Kyle Buchanan from the New York Times, and he was just like, I hated it. as it emerged, it was very, very polarizing.
Yeah, you had something to kick against.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's a case of people misunderstanding it, because I do agree with a lot of the criticisms to the world. The score's over-egged and it's trying to make you cry as much as it possibly can, and you know, it's like it's pummeling you like an emotional battering ram. I do have a close relationship to the subject matter, because it's about parental estrangement, and I haven't spoken to my mum for about 4 or 5 years. So I had to interrogate it after the fact. Like, you know, I was like bawling and weeping, and I was like, but is it because of the subject? Is it because of the idea of a parental estrangement and abandonment, or is it because of the material? And I think it's because of the material, because I haven't actually read the play or seen the play, I don't know, because it is based on a play by, I think it's Scott D. Hunter, I can't remember the name of the guy.
Yeah, it's D. Hunter.
It's D. Hunter. Yeah. You know, and as far as I understand, there's quite a lot of fidelity to the original text. I thought that was a... I'm just really taken aback by the authenticity and compassion with this guy's story, both with his kind of his physical predicament and his physiological state, which, you know, it handles with a lot of delicate compassion. It's very, very deft. And I fear that people will reduce it on the surface to like this story about... a 600-pound guy who can't leave his flat, which I think it's handled with more care than that, and also that the stuff about the parental work, it's there's a lot more authenticity there than I've seen in a lot of Hollywood pictures, at least, about that theme and that idea.
Well, I was going to ask, What have you not liked then? What have you been on the other side of the fence, or have you not had that feeling yet?
This has probably been I don't know how many film festivals I've been to at this point. I've been writing professionally for 4 or 5 years now. So I went to my first film festival, I think it was 2019. I think it might have been Berlin. This is the best that I can remember going to in terms of just sheer quality, as I think everybody expected when the program first came out. But I did, thank God, go to a film that I walked out of after 30 minutes this morning. I think it was The Lord of the Ants, which, you know, up until that point, I was worried that I'd lost all of my taste and I just liked everything because it's Venice and because it's gorgeous and because there's so much hype around the movies and everything. I was like, am I really becoming, you know, this populist and everything? But I totally am. I am such a shill for big films and everything. But no, this was absolutely appalling. And I walked out and I felt quite triumphant, because thank God I do have a meter for, I do actually dislike things still. I can be a bit of an arsehole. How wonderful.
My barometer is still working in the, yeah, it's not just, the needle's not just stuck.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, The Lord of the Ants is an Italian film by Gianni Emilio, and it's about the Bribanti case. Aldo Bribanti, who was a sort of, it's kind of an intellectual poet, theatre writer, and he was tried. I mean, this is the history is really interesting. I agree with you. The film was not, it was no great shakes, but he was tried under a law called plagiarism of the mind, because a Mussolini and the fascists wouldn't admit that there was such a thing as homosexuality in Italy, so they didn't actually have a law against it in the books, and they had to sort of convert this law in the 1960s, this is, to prosecute this poor guy and send him to prison. Yeah, it's a very slow-paced, serious, po-faced, kind of miserablest version of gay sex as well. I mean, there's barely a kiss in it, I don't think. And all the gay sex is portrayed as being really sort of tragic and sad, and why do you want to be gay if this is the, do you know what I mean? If this is the thing,
yeah.
If the way it's being produced,
I mean, your explanation of the events there was more interesting to me than the 2-hour and 10-minute film I could have sat through. So I mean, I don't know. I just there was something about. It's the kind of thing that should really grip me. I didn't know the context of the story before I walked. It was kind of a blind watch. So it opens, I think the first 5 minutes you get like in the 1960s, mid-1960s, and it's very sumptuous set design. It feels very credible as a period piece. But then you're introduced to the two main queer characters, or as far as I can understand, having seen it 35 minutes or there. So you see this central subject, and then his kind of younger, much, much younger muse. And they're having a conversation where they're just exchanging lines of poetry.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is so Italian. I love Italian cinema, as I've literally just said about Bones and all and everything, but I found it so annoying and so grating. And then very quickly, the central subject isn't likable in the slightest.
Yep. He's
really, really annoying. He's just going, the ants metaphors and allegories, because he has an ant farm, and the ants are trapped within the ant farm, and blah, 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 blah. Just really, really kind of grating, and pretentious. And it's the kind of thing where, like, within the first 15 minutes, the characters are evoking philosophers and, speaking in, like, really stunted and unrealistic ways, which might otherwise work, but here it really doesn't.
And the closest emotional sort of scene, the biggest pathos, is reserved for his mother.
Right.
It's his mother who has suffered.
Is it?
Yeah, it's his mother who sort of, well, spoiler, dies at the end. And so it's just, yeah, I mean, how Italian is that?
Sorry, the mother of...
Bribanti, of the older guy.
Okay, yeah. Not the mother who puts her son into conversion therapy.
No, she's a wicked mother. But it's all mothers.
Totally.
When it comes down to it, it's all mothers. Italy is all mothers.
Oh, man.
Right, listen, we're going to have to do a part one and part two of this conversation, because I've got to run off and see Kim Key Duck.
Okay.
But so we've had your what's great and what's not so great at the festival. I'm going to talk to you later on for the book and the author. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
See, we're too interesting. We just can't stop ourselves.
Okay.